Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, where we feature community conversations around South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel throughout our community and listen to local groups discuss what matters to them. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ammon Swenson. Today's show features the storytelling event Teacher Tales. In a format similar to the Moth or Arctic Entries, Teacher Tales is a celebration of educators and all that they do. This event was produced in partnership with Hearthkin and was recorded at Beartooth on April 30th. This event was hosted by Sarah Kronick and Matt Sugita. More information can be found on teachertales.org.
So stories connect us. We're living in a time where one of the most important jobs in the world is undervalued and overlooked, yet highly scrutinized and politicized. We're in a current state of crisis in education, and Teacher Tales is a piece of the puzzle that reminds us who we are and what we are doing about it. It's a time to hear real stories from real educators about what teaching is all about. The ups, the downs, the moments that will make you laugh and cry in a single breath. We know you're all here because a teacher made a difference in your life. Tonight, we raise a glass to celebrate educators and their endless devotion to a better tomorrow.
Here's how it works. We've got seven storytellers behind us, and they each have 6 to 8 minutes. Did you hear that, guys? 6 to 8 minutes.
So the stories tonight will cover a range of topics, from lighthearted and funny to the hard topics that teachers are there for. In their countless roles as educators, nurturers, and beyond, these stories honor the strength and complexity of lived experience. One piece in the first half gently explores the challenges of depression, while another thoughtfully addresses the struggles surrounding addiction. So if you have any issues or anything, just be aware of that. All right, so Sarah, you can introduce the first speaker.
Yep. Enough of us talking, right? Okay, so we all know that educators are very passionate and very devoted to their craft. They live and breathe it, seriously. Our first storyteller takes it to, like, the next level. Most of you probably already know who I'm talking about because probably everybody in this room knows this person because she knows everybody in town. And the reason she knows everybody in town is because she cares about everybody in town. And it's her nature, and she does it with everything that she does. Please welcome Val.
Every K-12 educator knows that the most challenging years of teaching are the first three. I found this to be especially true because at the time, I was a single mom with three little girls, all under the age of 10, without a relative around for thousands of miles. My solution was pretty simple. We moved into my classroom, almost literally. Each of my girls picked out one of the tall cabinets, and they made it their home. They moved in their pillows, their blankets, their dolls, their stuffed animals. And while mommy lesson planned and graded and coached sports and activities, because that's what a new teacher does, they would watch movies on my overhead projector. They would draw fashion lines on my whiteboard with Eskimo marker for their Bratz dolls. It was a perfect system. And about 3 or 4 years in, we had perfected it. They would spend their time doing their thing, I would do my thing, and I had zero work-life balance. It was perfect. And then my principal went and did something that changed everything. He hired a new teacher, and he put him in the classroom directly across the hall from my own. Now, I found this new teacher pretty confusing. First of all, he taught a split of French and math. And as it might imply, he was very smart and well-traveled. He was also kind and funny and very good-looking, but that wasn't relevant in my life. He also didn't mind my little girls running back and forth between our two classrooms, so they felt like they doubled their territory in the school. We quickly realized that we shared many students in common, and oftentimes, as the day would wrap up, we'd find ourselves chatting about those kids, ways we could better support them, funny things that they had said or done. And one student who almost always made the end-of-day wrap-up was a young man by the name of Jacob. Now, every teacher in this room has had a Jacob. And if you're lucky, you've had several of them. Because Jacobs are the most challenging of students. They are the most hilarious of students. They are the most brilliant and creative of students. They are the students that make teaching the joy and the hard work that it is. Jacob saw the world in black and white, and he was never wrong. He had so many thoughts and ideas going through his head all the time that he could barely contain them. You never knew what he was going to say or when he was going to say it. For example, one day in the French teacher's room, while the students were working silently, Jacob suddenly blurted out, "What's Miss Cordero doing in here?" Well, Miss Cordero was the Spanish teacher, and she was not in the French teacher's classroom. All of the students turned to look and see what Jacob was looking at, including the student sitting directly in front of him, who, when he turned around, turned out to be a varsity hockey player with a new haircut. That, to Jacob's credit, did look quite a bit like Miss Cordero. Chaos ensued. Another day in my classroom, he stood up and proudly announced that he had written a screenplay, and he would be holding auditions in my classroom today at lunch. Now, I found this both surprising and a little bit hurtful. Surprising because Jacob had never run this by me. Hurtful because he also felt the need to tell the class he had written the story during one of my very boring lectures. Always a supporter of the arts, I allowed it. But unfortunately, no one showed up to audition. I felt really bad, and at the end of the day, when I met with a French teacher, we talked about, well, let's get the DDF team involved. That's drama, debate, and forensics, in case you're not aware, also known as your future actors and lawyers. They were quick to volunteer. Jacob was thrilled. He brought them in. He did cold reads, partner reads, group reads, but not very far into the process, he dismissed them all for a lack of talent and announced that the production was canceled. Which isn't bad for a budding actor, little dose of early rejection. But Jacob's biggest challenge was yet to come. One day in early November, while we were going over current events, Jacob demanded to know, "What is this school doing about Felix the Cat Day?" Now, I didn't even know who Felix the Cat was. Jacob was quick to inform me, only the most important of animated characters of all time. I said, "Jacob, I have no idea." So I sent him to meet with AJ, the student body president, and plead his case. He returned shortly thereafter, looking really dejected. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, AJ said that Felix the Cat Day is on Monday, which is also Veterans Day, and there's no school. So therefore, this school will not be doing anything about Felix the Cat Day." He was crushed. I talked to the French teacher at the end of the day, and he lamented the issue with me as well. Monday came and went, and along with it, Felix the Cat Day. Now, on Tuesday, I normally would have had a classroom filled with students at lunch, but that day I had an IEP meeting. So when I got back to my classroom, the only one in there was my teacher aide, Tia. When I opened my classroom door, I was shocked by what I found. My entire classroom was plastered in black and white posters of Felix the Cat, and they read, "Happy Felix the Cat Day, observed." I was over the moon. Oh, my God. I was like, "Who did this?" I turned to Tia. I said, "Tia, who was in here? Who did this?" She didn't even look up from what she was doing. She simply said, "French teacher stopped over to see you." I said, "Okay, sure. I'll talk to the French teacher later." Was this student government? Oh, my God. AJ came through. This is amazing. Oh, my God. Jacob is going to be so excited. "Tia, who did this?" This time she glanced up and said, "I'm not supposed to say. French teacher stopped over to see you." I said, "Right, I'll talk to the French teacher after school." At this point, kids were starting to come in the room. They were taking in the sight, and they were just as excited as I was. They knew how much this was going to mean to Jacob, and we couldn't wait. And then it happened. Jacob walked into the room, and I watched his expression change from one of confusion to awe to sheer joy. And as the smile spread across his face, he loudly said, "I did it! I made this school celebrate Felix the Cat Day!" The room erupted in applause and laughter. It was one of the best days teaching ever, and I couldn't wait to share it with the French teacher. As soon as the bell rang, I ran across the hall, threw open his door, and said, "Oh my God, you're never going to believe what happened. Oh my God," I started explaining it. He was laughing. He knows Jacob. It was so exciting. And then I remembered, "Oh shoot." I said, "Tia said that you stopped over and you needed something. What did you need?" He said, "Oh no, it's nothing. Don't worry about it." I said, "No, really, here I am like rattling on about my day. Just what did you need? I'm happy." He had just a slight smile on his face. And he said, "It was nothing. It all worked out." And it wasn't until that moment that I realized what had happened. I said, "Oh, oh, wait a minute. This wasn't student government. You did this. Why did you do that? Why would you go to all that trouble? I wasn't used to anyone helping me, my kids, and kind of doing it on my own here. It's kind of worked out. And he said, I see how hard you work. It was no big deal. It was fun. And I know how much you care about your girls and your students. And Jacob is my student, too. I thought it might make him happy. And I thought it might make you happy. I said it did. It made everybody happy. Thank you. If you ask any teacher what's the best part about teaching, they will always say it's the students. But if you ask a follow-up and you say, what's the second best part about teaching? Almost without exception, they will say it's the other teachers. It's that teacher who lifts you up when you're feeling down. The teacher who has a backup lesson plan when something unexpected happens. It's the teacher who has the fill-in-the-blank, the cards, the dice, the calculators that goes out in the mass email. It's the teacher that celebrates your accomplishments and celebrates your wins as if they were their own. The best parts about teaching are the Jacobs and the French teachers. And together, they make teaching the best job in the world. As it turns out, that French teacher was extra special. And eventually, we even spent some time together outside of school. And just two short Felix the Cat holidays later, I married that French teacher. Thank you.
Great job, Val. Thank you for your story and bringing so much energy and love and devotion to our profession. What's really nice is when those teachers and students pick you up when you're not even asking for it. And I've experienced that numerous times, and I know a lot of the colleagues up here have done the same thing. So imagine moving here to Alaska, and to make it even more challenging, rural Alaska, from the eastern seaboard of the United States as your first teaching assignment. Alaska picks certain kinds of people to keep, and Richard is one of them. He's an educator who has adapted to his surroundings, both in community and schools, making Alaska his home. Please welcome Richard, or Mr. B.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out. Communication is paramount in our profession, and positive communication is even more important and profound as well. My story tonight is about some positive communication that I had in my career. As we progress here, I was a teacher at East High School in 2016-2017. So, go Thunderbirds, yeah. currently, I'm teaching at Anchorage Stream Academy. Go Rapids. Yeah, there we go. As we progress, though, that year at East High School, I had a Algebra A class. And in that Algebra A class in quarter three, I had that student. No, not that student. That student. The lovable scamp that always is boisterous, late to class, consistently getting a little bit in trouble. One of my focuses that year was making connections. And I made a connection with that student, Corey. But to begin the year, one of my focuses, like I said, was to make the connections with the students, build those relationships, and really show them that I wanted to be there. I wasn't just giving them worksheets. I wasn't wasting their time. We were in this together. I really wanted them to learn the material. And I did really well. I was successful. 32 students. It's a lot of lives to connect with. But I did my best, and we were there. Winter break happened. Everything was going really well. Relaxing, shredding down the mountain at Alyeska a little bit, skating at Cheney Lake, Westchester, all of the things that we do here to keep ourselves occupied and refresh. That Monday on quarter three came quickly, though, as it always does. I went to my classroom. He started at 7:30 a.m. I was there probably about quarter to seven, and I opened up my email, started reading through my list of things to do, and I noticed that my Algebra A class was no longer 32 students. It was 36 students. So I had a couple new people to make connections with. as I looked up from my laptop and saw the 35 desks I had in my classroom, which, as we all do, we made do. So we figured it out. First class went really well. Corey was late, as usual. And everything started working. We started making connections. And then one day during that class, Corey was on time. And I just welcomed him into my class. I said, thank you. I'm glad you're here. Was able to take some notes, was working on different things, make some connections, actually conversing with on-task information with other students, which is impressive. So I knew at that point I needed to communicate home, and I needed to make sure that people knew that he did so well. So I made that phone call after school. I called mom. And I said, hello, my name is Richard Beer. I go by Mr. B in the classroom. I have Corey in my class in Algebra A, and I just was wondering if you had some time to talk. Well, of course, I got a reply back with, what'd they do now? All right. Slow down here, I guess. And say, oh, no, actually, just wanted to communicate with you that they were on time today. They were engaged in class. They were working really well. And I could just tell that they had the ability to pass my class. The reason they were in Algebra A in quarter three and not in quarter one or two is because they had failed first semester quarter one Algebra one. So I communicated with them that as long as they're coming to class, as long as they're getting the notes, as long as they're working with me, I can really get them to a point where they'd be more than it'd be more than easy for them to pass the class. So, dead silence on the phone. Okay, how's this parent going to react? Am I going to get yelled at? Am I going to get argued with? Will I have to meet up with my evaluator tomorrow? How many emails am I going to have to answer for this? Those types of things race through my brain. And then I heard her, and she was really, really trying to talk, and she was, it was tough for her, and she had told me, I have not had one teacher call home positively and say, I appreciate and love that Corey is in my class since they started sixth grade. So they were in ninth grade at the time, and you can imagine 4 years of calls from teachers and never once having that be a positive interaction. Moving forward, the next class, Corey was on time to class, and it was great. I welcomed him in the class. I said, hey, Corey, I called your mom yesterday. Of course, there was a crew of students around Corey, did the whole ooh, and Corey looked up on me and said, yeah, thanks, Mr. B. She went and took me to get ice cream. So, but as we move forward from that day, he passed my class and he was never late again. Thank you.
I met Richard in a dark basement because I was crashing this educational conference that I wasn't supposed to be at. And it was an amazing first impression. I knew immediately that this fellow was what he said he was. He showed up, he's consistent, he cares. And it was so easy to see just in those moments. And thank you for reminding us of how powerful those positive first interactions are. Our next storyteller came to Alaska in the 70s like any normal family would do. Her and her four siblings and mom and dad loaded up in, I think it was a van. I'm going to call it a van now, and they drove up the Alcan. And she's been here ever since. Tammy is rooted in this place. She is a creative. She plays. She has uplifting melodies of artistic works. Tammy's family history here in Anchorage is super embedded in public education. She carries a very grand legacy of care, curiosity, and kindness, and she wears it really well. Please help me welcome Tammy.
Miss Tammy, is today tomorrow? I was asked that question many years ago from a kindergarten student before I retired. I taught for 20 years at Denali Montessori School, right downtown. Woo-hoo! Thank you. Right downtown on 9th and Cordova, and it was a wonderful career. Well, when that child asked that question of me, I really didn't know how to answer. And so, of course, I asked for more information. And the child said, well, my mom said that she was going to call in sick tomorrow, but she went to work today after all, and I am a little confused. That child became my teacher right then, and I did not know how to answer. So when people think of teachers, most often they think of a female standing in front of a classroom with children looking, sitting at desks, waiting for information. But over 100 years ago, Dr. Maria Montessori said something that really shocked the world of educators at the time, and she suggested that in order to become a good teacher, one must really learn how to follow the child, follow their ambitions, their body language, their understandings, their misunderstandings, and their questions. Follow the child. Well, I often felt like I was chasing the herd. I've got some stories about my own inner child that I'd like to share with you tonight. When I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a tightrope walker in the circus. And I will credit my dad, Sid Phelps, for that wonderful ambition. My dad was a musician, a professional musician, and he played the sweetest Dixieland trumpet you'd ever want to hear. He had a wonderful sense of humor, and he was extremely creative, and he knew how to make rope swings. And these were the kind of rope swings that you hang on to and just swing like Tarzan and Jane. In fact, he made rope swings in the backyard of every house where we lived. Us five kids spent so many hours on those swings. And in fact, we even had a rope swing in our house one time. Well, I woke up one morning and in Nebraska, ran out to the backyard like I always did. Imagine my delight when I was standing there, a circus performer, 5 years old, holding onto the rope, facing a backyard full of tumbleweeds. I spent hours on that swing. I even had a stage name. I thought of my costume. It had fringe, it had sparkles. I even wore fishnets. And I swung over and over and around that sea of death so many times. You know, I did have a stage name, but I think it ran off with the circus because I do not remember it now. But I do remember another time when my older sister Sue and I were helping Mom wash the clothes in Grandma Bucky's South Dakota basement. Now, this basement was creepy. There was an overhead light that cast really dark shadows in the corners, and it was where the spiders lived. And the walls in the basement were cinder blocks, very rough. And the basement stunk. It was mildew and mold, and it was just a creepy place. But, you know, Mom knew how to make things fun. And she got a big metal wash tub, and she said, girls, go get your baby doll clothes. She added laundry detergent powder and just the right amount of water to it to make it like a wallpaper paste. And we put our clothes, the baby doll clothes, in there, and we mushed them all up, and we spread them all over those stucco cinder block walls in the basement. And voila, we had an art installation. But it was a temporary art installation because a few days later they dried, they fell off, they got dirty, and we had to wash them all over again. I'd like to jump forward now several years to my first marriage proposal. There he was, his hand, arm outstretched, sweaty hand. I was not used to seeing him nervous, but he opened his hand, and I understood why immediately. He said he loved me, and he said he wanted to marry me. Well, I was shocked. we'd only known each other a few months, not even a year. I said, I need more time. And he agreed. Well, that night, I went and I talked to Mom. And I went with my hand sweaty, and she said, "You look nervous." And I was. And when I opened my hand, she looked at it. She saw the diamond, and she exclaimed how beautiful it was. But she also noticed the thin band, the wear on the back of the ring. And she asked if I knew where he got it. I didn't. I hadn't asked. Well, that night, my mom was my teacher, like she had been every day I had with her. The next day, there he was, talking with his buddies. And I went and I pulled him aside. And I said, "Eddie," I think his name was Eddie, "we need to talk." And he said, "Sure." And so I gave him the ring back. And I said, "You know, I talked with my mom last night. And she said that we probably need more time, you know, like a lot more time. And she also said that maybe you should return the ring to your mom, that she might be missing it right about now." And he said, "Yeah, you're right." And just then, the morning school bell rang, and off he ran to the fourth grade line, and I ran to the third grade line. And on the way, he said, "Tammy, do you want to play tetherball with me today at recess?" And I said, "I do." Well, all of these stories have added up to something, and I keep thinking about the child who asked, "Miss Tammy, is today tomorrow?" Well, what do these stories have to do with that? Have I found my own inner child? Have I learned to become a better teacher, a better person, maybe even a better artist along the way? Well, I've been a professional artist now for 16 years, and I love it. And several years ago, I made a painting, and this painting has a rope swing. And it was inspired, of course, by all the circus memories I had, and also the metronome that Dad taught us kids how to use when he had us practice our music. And I named that piece Her Dad's Metronome. And a few years ago, I was invited by Georgia Blue of Georgia Blue Gallery to exhibit a 14-piece collection that I made, and the collection is called The Woman Within. And each of those pieces has a baby dress that I've adhered with cold wax on a cradle board and painted, and each of those dresses has a story of the woman within, and it is an inner child of the woman within. And finally, just over 5 years ago, another boy got down on his knee and gave me a ring. And just like with Eddie, I said, "I do." So my life today is a reflection of the girl I was. And I finally have an answer to that child who said, "Miss Tammy, is today tomorrow?" I can confidently say yes. All of our todays are tomorrow. Make them count and pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you for your story, Tammy. In the world that we live in, those full circle moments really do make today's tomorrow. Now, speaking of full circle moments, we're in one right now. I've known our next storyteller as not only my favorite colleague's son, but a student at KCC, now King Tech, for over 20 years. He's kin to me and many in this room. I'm proud to present my dear brother from our favorite mother, Luke.
So a couple of years ago, I was a burned out emergency nurse. I was a traveling lone wolf, determined to make it on my own. On the outside, I was living the dream. I was traveling, seeing new places, meeting new people, making good money. But on the inside, there was just a chasm of loneliness and meaninglessness that was deepening. I was face to face with a daily revolving door of human suffering and what seems to be, you know, the epicenter of society's collective trauma. I was anxious, depressed, lost, and on the verge of doing something that I couldn't reverse, so something had to change. Growing up, I hit all the usual rites of passage, you know, getting my license, turning 21, being able to rent a car, spinning a perfect Brody in the service parking lot. But these all kind of felt like more like life checkboxes than meaningful transitions. In my search for this deep humanness, I've pushed myself doing cold plunges, Wim Hof breathing, breathe. And I've even done a 23-day water fast, searching for some connection. All solo pursuits meant to, I don't know, prove something to myself. I used to watch Alone religiously, dreaming of reclaiming something primal, something real. I thought this was that human element that I've been missing. After doing a bunch of soul searching, I decided to take time off and go to the Wilderness Awareness School down in Washington. It was a 9-month adult rite of passage program. I expected to go there and just learn a bunch of survival skills. What I did not expect was to walk into a circle of barefoot singing hippies. Every defense in me flared up. My shadows and projections just pouring out of me. I was not here for this. But something told me to stay, so I did. We started each day by singing each other into the group, sharing gratitude and what was alive in us. I squirmed for the first couple months at what seemed childish and a little over-emotional. Slowly, the rest of the curriculum unfolded. We learned things like friction fire, plant identification, bird language, animal tracking, shelter building. It was just a fire hose of ancestral knowledge that seeped into my bones, and it felt like I'd done it before. And then slowly, more parts of me unfolded too as I shared more, sang a little more. By winter's end, it was time to do our final rite of passage. It would be a 5-day trip with the class, no food and nothing but the clothes on our backs. This was supposed to be the moment of truth, and I decided not to go. I had been dealing with some hip and back pain, and I didn't want to risk setting myself back. Plus, I had fasted before, so I knew I could meet that challenge, and I've done solo backpacking trips, so I could handle it. I decided to do my own trip. I did a fast, and I lasted about 2.5 days, and I came home early, bored and alone. I almost didn't come to the welcome home gathering for my classmates. Shame had crept in, but I showed up. There was a whole community gathered, elders, kids, mentors. There was food laid out, there were blankets, it was around a big fire. The energy was just electric. And then we heard it, whispers coming, they're almost here. And then my classmates emerged, still wearing the clothes they'd had on for the last 5.5 days. Soot-covered, skinny faces, glowing, some with tears on their faces. And we sang them home. Home, I'm going home, I need a land to heal my soul. Take me home, over the green, green hills and far away. They shared stories of hunger, struggle, success, tears, laughter. Everyone had brought something to the group. Some were good at making fire, others were good at sniffing out water. Some could build shelters really well. None of them did it alone. It was not a test of individual toughness, but of interdependence. It's taken me a year, and preparing for this, I realized what I had truly missed. I missed the deeper rite of passage, not one that happens in isolation, but one that happens from belonging. A classmate before going out had told me, Luke, Maybe it'd be your challenge to let others help you while we're out there. To which I had scoffed. I needed to be strong, to be useful. If I couldn't carry my weight out there, what good was I? But I was wrong. While I really value being able to push yourself individually, discover who you are, and push past perceived limitations, pretending to be the rock all the time only brings pain and disconnection. What I have learned and what I am still trying to learn is that the real medicine comes in letting others see us, to help us, to hold us when we can't hold ourselves. The teachers at that school helped awaken a long dormant part of me and got me in touch with nature in a way I never had before and with community. My classmates showed me it's okay to show up imperfect, unsure, and tender. I'm still learning how to ask for help, but every time I do, I give someone the opportunity to show up. And in doing so, I find my teachers are everywhere. We were never made to go it alone. We're a species of connection, of reciprocity, shared fire and song, and shared stories. Despite my best efforts to make myself alone, what I've truly needed all along is to be made with and for others. I'm not a lone wolf after all, and I've embraced being barefoot and singing too. Thank you.
Let's begin the second part of the show. So one of the things that's important to us at Teacher Tales is showing that educators come in many different forms. Some fit the world in their classroom, and others make the world their classroom. Jeff loves to travel and fish and be present in life. I mean, this guy could be a long-lost brother separated at birth, and now we're reunited to share stories of life, fishing, and being total food dorks. Please welcome Jeff.
Ethiopia, my family's second home. Alaskans know how arduous it is sometimes just traveling to the lower 48, let alone 3 days, 12 time zones, and halfway around the world. So a little background. In 2004, before I got married, my wife was an elementary teacher in Asia, and I studied abroad after high school in South America for a year. Our love for international travel and culture is one of the things that brought us together. And she's absolutely gorgeous to me. Through a family friend in 2005, we were given a random, all of a sudden, opportunity to go to Ethiopia on an exploratory trip to check out different community development projects. And we thought, let's do it. So we went. And that's the beginning of this story. We arrive in Ethiopia in 2005, married barely a year, and we set foot on the continent of Africa for the first time. And it was sights and smells and things you would just never imagine. Like, whoa, we're in Africa. And one of the most impactful moments for us was when we visited this mud hut kindergarten, literally in the middle of nowhere, about a day and a half drive from the capital city through dirt roads that reminded me of the Denali Highway going caribou hunting, but in a Toyota Corolla in the bush of Africa. We get to this school that's a 12 by 12 mud hut, and I'm thinking, this is a school? This is like not what we have in Alaska. And as we enter the schoolroom, there are 60 kindergartners packed in this little 12 by 12 room, sitting on benches, no desks, no paper, no pencils, just a chalkboard, and they're clapping. Welcome, welcome. And my wife and I are like, whoa, this is intense. Like, this is so different. And they're smiling. And one of the translators started asking the kids, share with Jeff and Mariah, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And these little kindergartners with these big smiley faces, like, I want to be a teacher. I want to be a doctor. I want to be an engineer. And I started bawling. I literally started bawling because kids are kids, whether they're in Africa or in Alaska. They have hopes and dreams. And it was in that moment where my wife and I were literally cattle branded in our hearts that we were going to be a part of this nation in some way, shape, or form. We didn't know how. We were pretty broke. We were barely married. She was a teacher. But we were going to figure it out. Another amazing thing about Ethiopia, it's the birthplace of coffee. Do you guys know that? And we drank a lot of coffee because we're the foreign guests. And they're like, would you like coffee? Yes, I would. And so we drank a lot of coffee. And they do coffee different. It's like a two-hour ceremony. They roast it in the living room. I'm not kidding. The whole living room fills up with aroma of coffee. And then they get a mortar and pestle out and grind it and brew it. It's a two-hour experience. And to this day, we love it. We absolutely love it. Upon our return from that life-changing trip, surprise, we have our first son, a baby. And we're like, let's still take him to Ethiopia. We really want to go back. And my dad, who's an immigrant from Korea, I'm a first-generation Korean-American, he said in his thick ass, Jep, Africa danger. You can't go to Africa. Like, he can't take your baby to Africa, my grandson. And my dad had no idea that Ethiopia had already been injected in our hearts. And so we, like crazy people, I guess. A lot of my friends are like, you're taking your baby to Africa? Like, let's go. So we went, and we were there because we just have a heart for kids. We wanted to be a part of this school. And as we were, it was an 8-month trip, and as we were waiting for our rental, we were staying with a friend on this compound, and they have guards that guard home there because it's kind of dangerous sometimes. Not in all places, but in some places it is. And I noticed this really smiley guard that always greeted us, and I said, one day I said, where do you live? He's like, I'm like, what's that? He literally lived in the crawl space. And so I said, can I check it out? I'm a friendly guy. And it was literally, imagine like a 6x6 room, like 3.5 feet high. I had to go down on my hands and knees. And I immediately broke out in hives because there was so much mold, no ventilation. And I was just, I left that experience and I told my wife, I was like, we got to do something about this. Like, let's bring him into our house. And so I said to Iyasu, that translates to Joshua, I said, hey, you want to come live with us? I know you don't know us, but we're good people, and we would love to help you in any way we can. And he's like, no, I'll think about it, you know? And so after he thought about it for a while and he got to know us, he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And so we took him in, and our son was barely like one, and he couldn't call him Iyasu, so he affectionately called him Yaya. And Iyasu turned out to be a gift to us. And we'll never forget when we got Iyasu his room and the bed, he just stood there staring at the bed. And we're like, you okay? And he's like, I've never had a bed before. And my wife and I were like, whoa, this is a different world. And we did life with him for 8 months. He ate a lot of Korean food in Africa because Koreans take their food everywhere. And we had a lot of Ethiopian food and street food, and we did life together. And after we left that 8-month trip, he became so close to us. We're like, man, let's help him go to school. So we committed to helping him go to school, to electrical school. And when we came back to Alaska, after 8 months of doing this, we were broke pretty much. We literally had $120 in our account, and we had promised to send him $100 a month. And I'll never forget being at Fred Meyer in Fairbanks, because that's where we used to live, and standing at the customer service line, and like, if I send him $100, we got $20. But I was like, we committed to doing this, so I did it, and we had $20, and my son is now a toddler, because he was one, and now 8 months go by, and he said, Dad, can we get some grapes? And I said, and I was grappling, I was like, no, we cannot buy grapes, we have $20, grapes are like $6 a pound in Fairbanks, but things work out when you stick to your word. And not during this time, my wife reapplied for a teaching job, and she beat out 40 applicants for the KG job. And I was like, yes, I knew it'd work out. So fast forward 20 years. Wanji Shoa went from 50-kid mud hut to a multi-acre compound with almost 1,000 students. It's the number one school in the region, and a lot of those kids where we heard the dreams, they are those doctors now. They are those future teachers. Iyasu got married, has two beautiful daughters and two businesses, and he's a successful electrician. We had no idea that 20 years ago, that saying yes to something that just kind of came out of nowhere would change our lives. And I think when we're willing to step out of our comfort zones and take risks, sometimes we get the coolest adventures and gifts that we would have never expected. As much as we love Ethiopia and consider it our second home, if you were to talk to any one of our kids, they would say, Alaska is our first home.
I feel like teachers and educators are so good at this, of like really seeing what is needed at any given time and showing up. And that's what you do. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. Our next storyteller is a force. I was immediately struck by Roz the first time I heard her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her passion for education runs through everything she does. If I read through a list of this woman's accomplishments, we would be here all night, truly. This woman is unbelievable, and I have no idea how you do it. You have 5 children, too. Come on. So, if it's not obvious already, Roz is a huge mover and shaker in our community. She uses her voice in service to others. She is constantly in service to others, and I am so grateful you are here. I pretty much stalked her to get her to tell a story here. And, I mean, I was kind of obnoxious. I'm, like, blowing up her Facebook. I'm calling her. I'm like, come on. She's fine. Like, who? Like, I'm teaching right now. I'm in class. I'm like, oh, yeah. But she said yes, and so I'm so grateful and I'm so excited. Please give it up for Roz.
All right, so I'm going to take you on my journey. Cafeteria manager, paraprofessional, long-term sub, and a certified teacher, special education. With that being said, I'm going to tell you about a story when I was a long-term sub that kind of freaked me out a little bit. I used to hear all these different stories from women of color about how scary it was to be in this district, and I was like, no, not ours. So it was this one day, staff meeting. Or wait, nah, like, let me rewind just a little bit. So, like, I'm at this school. It's my neighborhood school. A lot of you know that I fight for my neighborhood, and I do all types of things for this neighborhood. And so we had a whole bunch of wonderful people come in, and ideas were given, and camaraderie was made, and all these different type of connections were built. And so fast forward just a little bit, after a while, I started feeling like, it ain't too many of us out here. Shout out to the black educators in the room. Oh, is there a couple? Because I always feel like it's 1% out of the 3% that we have, right? But with that being said, this day or this month, it would happen to be Black History Month. And I remember it like yesterday because I started feeling a little uneasy. I began to lose my why throughout the year. So school starts in August. Now we're in February. And my mom happened to send me, I was crying every day about quitting, and my mom was like, I'm gonna send you to North Carolina. And that's where my sister is, becoming a lawyer. And I was like, sure. We went to the Smithsonian African American Museum. From the moment you walk in, you cry, to the moment you walk out. And so by the time I was done with that museum, I was done with ASD. I was like, oh, I'm not going back over there. I'm finna start my own school, Black Power, right? I was just done. And so I get up this Monday morning, and we're having a staff meeting. And it's encouraged that, now mind you, remember, I'm a part of the 1%. So that tells you how many of us was possibly in this building. And the person's talking, and they're like, yeah, well, if you guys have any Black history questions, here goes your tokens. Ask them all about it. And so one staff member, I'll never forget him, he's white, he was so excited to jump up and explain how me and a prior teacher taught his class Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Now, mind you, this is a song that I grew up on. And, I mean, it didn't matter what day it was. My grandma was always singing it. And so there was a story in this older curriculum, because now we're in CKLA, right? But in this old curriculum, and it was about an Indian tribe, and it was right next door to a slave area. And at the end of the day, at some point in that book and in that story, they were singing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And so we broke out the hymn, and it was sang very beautifully. The kids had never heard it before. And so during this morning meeting, we sang it. And I was like, yeah, why not? At the end of us singing that, it was then said, well, if you're going to teach about Black history, make sure you come and check in with me first. And so, like I just heard in the gasp, everybody's eyes darts towards me, and I'm just like trying to keep a straight face, because mind you, I've already went to the African American Museum. And so I'm conflicted. And after the meeting, before school starts, I get called into the office with the other two tokens. And we're sitting down, and the question gets asked. Because every time I teach about Black history, I teach about slavery, right? I wouldn't have the great food at Mama Carol's if my ancestors didn't have the trash that we were given to turn it into that food. The chitlins, the hog mugs, the collard greens, right? Oxtails. We wouldn't have all those things if it wasn't for the ancestors. And I always talk about that. So I always talk about slavery. So the question gets asked, why do you feel like you need to talk about slavery when it comes to Black history? So while sitting in this meeting on these luxurious couches, I said, in my brain, and there's kids in here, so I can't say the word, but I was like, itch, don't answer. Don't answer, please don't answer. Because if you know me, you know I talk a whole lot, right? And so I was like, please don't answer, Roz, just keep your mouth closed. So the eyes were on me, and I was like, well, you two other tokens, please answer this question, because I'm not finna answer this question. And so one says, well, I don't feel like we have to talk about slavery. We should talk about all the just great things that Black people have done. And then the other one says, well, I mean, I guess we could talk about the White House. Okay, because last time I checked, slaves built that, right? But whatever. So then the eyes come back to me, and I really just was kind of stuck, and I was lost. And I thought to myself, well, I could answer like these two, or I could answer unapologetically, because as I'm going through this journey, I start thinking to myself, like, how do I be me, or am I supposed to be someone else? And so I answered, and I said, well, I mean, he just brought up the White House, so again, we have to talk about slavery when we talk about these things. Although it may seem like a bad thing, ultimately, I'm here, so it's a good thing, right? And it was a very intense room, and at the end of it, I left out, and I took a deep breath. I went home, and I called my mom. I remember crying on the phone, still conflicted. Went back to work, still conflicted. My mom had many words to say, but I'll save that too. And I called my mentor, and I told my mentor, this is it. I'm just going to quit. I could go take my teaching somewhere else, right? I was really thinking about going to the village and just doing whatever. And so my mentor was on the phone, and at that moment, my mentor stated, are you working for them or are you working for the kids? And I said, oh, yeah, my why. And so my why has always been, there isn't many of me. There isn't many of us. And there's a reflection of us into these kids, and they need to see us. I remember many times where a young girl was getting in trouble because she put a hood on her head. Well, it was because her mom was out of town and her hair wasn't done. I was the only barrier that broke that back to protect that child for why she had a hood on her head. Or while the heavyset child didn't want to run around in circles at the gym because she's heavy. She didn't want to do that. I remember being heavy. So again, I was that camel that broke that back, right? So I said, F it. Went back to work the next day. And after a long day of IEPs, I get called into the office. Mind you, I was a long-term sub, so y'all know that day was hella long. And I get called into the office, and I was told that I needed to pack my things and go home. Mind you, long-term subs don't have unions. We don't have a backing. We just have the get your shit and go home. And if you guys remember in my introduction, I have 5 kids. And so I just looked at that person, and I was like, all right. Walked out of the room, but if you guys know me, you know better. I went into somebody's classroom, and I just cried tons of tears, and I just was like, what did I do wrong? I replayed a recording over and over to try to figure out, what did I do wrong? What did I say wrong? Is it because I talked about slavery? Is it because I am me? Is it because I wore this sweatshirt one day, and I was asked not to wear it again? What was wrong? And so I never got the what was wrong. But what I did do was call that next principal that was looking for a staff member and said, hey, can you pick up my paperwork? And the next day I was back at work. And so it was just really scary because you never know, like, as a Black educator, what you're going to come up to, what you're going to go against. And, you know, I'm just happy because I'm working on my master's. I have a 4.0 right now. And I'm a special education middle school teacher, so she didn't stop anything. So, to all my educators of color, regardless of how weak a person might feel, you still stand in your truth, you still be who you are, and prayerfully we'll just be accepted for the unapologetically people that we are. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today for Addressing Alaskans. We just heard Teacher Tales, a storytelling event celebrating educators and all that they do. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.